I am Jennifer Davis. Hello. I work at Chef. I'm very grateful that Chef supports me giving awesome talks like this and coming to places like SREcon. You can tweet at me, SIGJE, and I've created a special hashtag, MTU_SREcon. Now, there is a secret about this hashtag that, sadly, for people who don't tweet, I'm sorry, because it's like the one place I'm going to look. At the end of my talk, sometime today, I'm going to check it out, and I'll tell you what it is at the end of my talk, what it is that I'm going to do with that hashtag. That's why it's a special hashtag. I'm not vain and like, yeah, talk to me all the time. But I'm going to do something for someone. So what am I talking about with Monitor the Unmeasurable? So here's the thing. We're in an environment where complexity is increasing. We've got increased velocity, and we, as SREs, we want to build highly resilient systems. We want to monitor them, and we want to be able to make changes as needed. We want to increase the value to our organizations. I mean, that's the whole point of DevOps, is increasing your value to your organization, having that clarity between different teams, organizations across industry. How many people, when they saw Heartbleed happen, saw that, yeah, maybe there is a signal here we're ignoring? Did anybody expect Heartbleed to happen? Right? Well, there's more coming, and we need to be able to monitor these fragilities in our environment. So monitoring should be viewed as a stack. Maybe not of delicious, tasty pancakes with lots of fruit, but it would be awesome if it did. Like if you were on call, PagerDuty paged you and you got pancakes while you're waiting to see if your thing got resolved. So the key is everything in your stack should be part of this monitoring piece, and your monitoring is going to be made up of layers. In all my time at Yahoo as a large-scale manager of systems, I saw a number of signals that said to me, hey, something is wrong here and we need to fix something. And when I went into different environments as a chef consultant, I was like, wow, it wasn't just Yahoo. It's small companies, large companies, everyone is vulnerable. And I wanted to do this, I wanted to talk about this and get people to actually start discussing what are these signals that we're missing? Now, the thing about it is, they don't have to be technology solution driven, right? It could be as simple as taking a dotted notebook and drawing your lines and deciding what you're gonna measure. Now, in this example, I'm coming from the sort of mindset of a manager, like, do I have successful one-on-ones? Is somebody expressing like unhappiness? Are people showing up to all the team meetings? Do people have task and project-oriented balance in what kind of work they do? Because it's been shown if we do too much toil work, we get unhappy, right? That's the whole thing of getting away from an operational mindset and do more of a sort of DevOps mindset of working with people to solve problems. So I'm going to talk about three types of signals that right now I think most organizations ignore. And these three are going to be easy to remember because it's TOP, right? How many people remember TOP and still part of their tool set? Okay, so technology, organization, and process. So when we talk about monitoring our technology signals, those signals are not the things, I'm not talking about availability, latencies, how many errors in our request rates. Those are all very important. What I'm talking about is sort of the signals we ignore. And I want to talk about these three, because I think they're really important. But I also think there's others. And I would love for people to tweet out their thoughts about technology signals that we're missing. So when I talk about dependencies and monitoring them, it's about having artifacts of software that depend on other artifacts, right? So in this example, I've got a chef cookbook that depends on a variety of cookbooks. And then the Windows cookbook depends on the chef handler cookbook. So when I have one cookbook, I'm also depending on these others. Ideally, I've penned my versions, and I know exactly what works with what. How many people heard or were affected by LeftPad last week or 2 weeks ago? Right. So this is the entirety of the LeftPad package on NPM. What happened is the author unpublished this package and broke a lot of builds. Now we could say, oh, if you just had hosted your own artifacts, you wouldn't have been bit. But eventually you would have had this problem if they hadn't resolved it. So monitoring our dependencies is kind of critical. Now, monitoring our consumers to producers on particular software, I don't know how many people do this. Do people actually do this yet? So when I'm talking about consumers to producers, I'm not talking about the software algorithm or problem. It's not that consumers to producers problem. What it is, though, is how many people are consuming the software versus producing something for the software. So if we look at software, we have software that, whether it's open source or proprietary, we have people working on that software. They're the ones contributing. And so we could look at it as, in GitHub, this contributors, or it might be forks, right? I don't know the exact right metric we should use here, but it's people who are contributing to something. Now, consumers, we might think of, maybe it's a people who are starring it or watching it, but as a producer, you probably have some way of measuring how many people are consuming your particular artifact. So what's the danger in this? Well, if we go back to Heartbleed, one of the dangers is we had a ton of consumers and a very small number of producers for OpenSSL. In fact, OpenSSL Foundation said we got $2,000 in funding of donations, and we have one employee working on this full time, right? That's a problem. That's a vulnerability. We should know, if there's important software, what the metric of consumers to producers are. Now, it doesn't mean that we should go and invent everything, right? It's not to say, oh, if it's a bad metric, we should just go and write it ourselves, because then you still have the same problem. You're the one producer. The value in open source is to have more producers. Now, if you can't produce, it's not your expertise, if you can't donate that time for somebody to go work, which is what Chef does for me, like, I work on cookbooks, they're donating my time to work on open source. That's my full-time engineering salary going towards this project. If you can do that, pay someone to do that for you. And that's how you were actually getting more producers, right? I think it's a very big vulnerability, and we're gonna see this more and more, where software is just gonna have bugs, fail to get updated. And speaking of companies, whether it's a company that's doing this or individuals, we need to look at what the value is to the individual or to the company. If you're using a product where the company is actually costing them money, if it's an open source product or it's proprietary and they're not selling it for enough to cover their costs, they're essentially spending money for that product to exist. So that's a vulnerability, because then that product might go away. I think about this when I look at Yahoo and Zimbra. Yahoo was spending so much money on the Yahoo Mail and Zimbra, right, having competing technologies, one of them had to go. Zimbra was an awesome product at the time. I can't say that that's necessarily the thing, because I wasn't there. I mean, I was at Yahoo, but I wasn't in that team. But if I look at it and I say, okay, this company is spending X amount of dollars for developing a product, and they're making X minus $1 million, that product's gonna go away. So this is one of those places where you might wanna consider, oh, I might think about investing more money into this or finding a new solution. So next, organizational signals. Again, these are only three signals. There's others that are out there. I'd love to brainstorm with people about these. One is affinity. Another is single points of knowledge, and burnout. So when I talk about affinity, what I'm talking about is the strength of the relationships between different people on different teams, as well as across organizations. And so what Affinity does for you is you're able to have stronger binding relationships with people outside of your team, so DevOps or marketing ops or whatever problems you have, and other people in other organizations. And so you can actually find new people to hire for your team. You can find places where you have 0 points of knowledge. Say you don't know anything about database administration and you're running into a problem using RDS on AWS. Like, having 0 points of knowledge on your team about something, you're able to go to other people and get that knowledge. It's really hard to measure, though. LinkedIn used to have this great little visualization. Any LinkedIn folks here? There was this great visualization. Can you bring it back? Because it was really useful. So when you see one color, what that's actually telling you is that's pretty much one company. If you see it, lots of integration, that's strong affinity. It's these weak relationships between people that you don't work with day to day that are across different subject matter expertise. So you're getting a lot of value out of that. I can pretty much find people to hire because I've met so many awesome people at different places. So yeah, come work with me. Another organizational problem to monitor is single points of knowledge. Now, I'm not talking about single points of truth. That's good documentation. You want to have one source of that. What I'm talking about is when you've got one person, say her name is Jennifer, and she's the only one who can reliably keep a service running because it's very complex. As much as she documents and trains people, and she's getting paged at 2 a.m., and people are like, you're the only one who can help me. And if you saw Dave's talk from earlier, he was talking about burnout, and that's kind of what happens. Burnout's actually not a symptom of an individual. It's a symptom of the system and the team. The fact that I'm the Jennifer in this question, the fact that I was the only one, I was the fragility. And I don't think that we often think about why we get these single points of knowledge. It's because maybe we have a small team, we gotta do more with less, and we celebrate that. But we also need to make sure that we have overlap in our knowledge and our skills. If we're not monitoring for burnout, which is not the individual's problem, it's the system, right? My boss at the time was really awesome at Yahoo, told me, go take a vacation or I'm firing you. And I was like, wait, no, what? I can't, like, there's this thing, I have to do it. And he's like, Jennifer, it'll be fine. It'll be completely fine. You'll just go and you'll have a good break. If you read your email or check anything, you're fired. I was like, okay. I came back a week later, everything was burning up. It was the first Sev Zero in Yahoo's history. We lost hundreds of millions of dollars. And I was like, shit, oh, I'm such a failure. And I was like, but it was, if you just did X, Y, and Z. And my boss was like, you know what, I knew it was gonna happen. I knew one, you were burned out. And two, we had a vulnerability, we had to fix it. That boss who was at Intuit was like so awesome. Like very clearly was like, this is not your fault. You're not a failure. We should have had this happen a long time ago because you can't be part of the system. The point of DevOps isn't to make humans like removed from the system completely. It's to make us do the smart work alongside of the automation. So monitor burnout. You may think, oh, it's okay, I'm cool. I can work long hours for long periods of time. I'm so awesome. Well, so many studies have been done over the years, we don't need to replicate them. But over time, like at the beginning, 60 hours, yeah, you're gonna get more work done. But we lie to ourselves that it continues. And over time, we get less done when we're doing the same number of hours. And so the reality is, yeah, if you need to crunch, cool. You gotta get something out in 2 weeks, do it. But recognize that your team, as a system, is gonna need to take that time off to recover, right? And this A, productivity, is generally a lot less than this B, this longer refactory period. So the problem is, if you have a small startup and you have people working, they're working those long hours, don't fucking fire the people at the end of your crunch time. They've been there for years and it's like, oh, we had to fire him because he just didn't fit with the culture anymore. Well, the problem is they're burned out and it's your fault. And you built your system on top of the people. Give them some time off, like a year's vacation. I don't know. But seriously, like, it's distilled. And I think that we're at this place in our time, in our industry, where we can say, hey, wait a minute. Working for company X, Y, and Z, they totally drain the life force of their people. And they're like distilling it into this like work because only the 10X engineers are capable of working. Because we believe the lie, right? But it's the system problem. It's not us as individuals. We're not failures. Okay, so going away from some burnout now. Might still have a little PTSD with burnout. I see some ex-Yahoos in the crowd. They know how it feels. How many people have actually suffered from burnout? It's okay, everybody can raise their hand. There's nobody document. Oh, I guess it is recorded. Sorry. So the third signal is monitoring your process signals. So you can see some of the problems with excessive gating of processes, the life cycle of products, and hiring and termination. So if we monitor our excessive gating, that's basically, in order to get something done, do you have to jump through a bunch of hoops, right? How many people, it's like, in order for me to get some hardware, I have to fill out the form in triplicate and then get through procurement and then explain to another group why it's okay that it's gonna be secure, and then another group why, and you just end up with these gates and you feel like my value to my effort is not equal, so why would I even do it? It's like you like die a little bit inside. And this is why we get the shadow HR and the shadow marketing and the shadow IT. Like, people are just like, fuck it. I'm going to get this shit done. I just got to do what I need to do. And, like, somebody can get mad at me later. Well, I'm not against people just getting their job done, because I really just want to get my job done. But as an organization, we need to eliminate the shadow aspect of this, right? We need to have the DevOps across all our different teams and talk about what we're doing as exceptions. Like, if I'm doing some marketing, like sending out some chef awesome love outside of the marketing team's efforts, I should just work with them, right? I shouldn't work against them in my private little kingdom. I should figure out what's the gateway that I'm actually following to get my work done. What are the gates that I have to actually care about? And then talk to people about it. Maybe some of those can go away. Maybe there's some kind of like SOX compliance where I'm doing so much activity and work with other teams that's not actually needed. Maybe I just need to spend some time with the legal team. So a second thing to do is monitor the software lifecycle. And what I'm talking about here is those items in which we think, okay, I created a thing, and now I'm not going to use it anymore. What do I do? This actually came up in the Chef environment, where Nordstrom was developed this great tool, Chef Vault. And it's not something that Chef did, but something that's really great in the community. And we're like, they don't want to use it anymore to the same degree. They want to pass it on. And it was a really cool conversation that we had as two different companies working together to talk about what's the life cycle of these community efforts that people depend on? Are we just going to let it go away, like just get thrown away? And we said, no, we'll take it on and we'll support it. So Chef supports Chef Vault now. There's hidden vulnerabilities in this, right? If you don't talk about what's the process, what actually happened with the left pad issue is the fact that the author could actually unpublish his work, meaning he took away every artifact that existed for left pad everywhere. That meant everybody who's trying to get this specific version, it broke everything. So while it wasn't cool that he did that, the real vulnerability, and NPM wrote this great letter about, you know, the postmortem process of discovering they actually need to think about their unpublished process. So when these things happen, it would be better if we think about it and be proactive about monitoring what it is about our software. How are we going to plan for it to live? How are we going to plan for it to gracefully die or to hand it off to somebody else? One key aspect, you might think that these are, yeah, HR should be doing this stuff, not me. Well, the vulnerabilities in your team, you're the one who is closest to them. It's your service that matters. And for me, when I think about my team, and I think about how people get on my team and off of my team, I care that I don't all of a sudden have a whole bunch of work added to my list of things to do. And I care that what they're feeling, so it's not unexpected, right? You know when one of your coworkers is about to leave. You kind of just know, right? If you're paying attention, you're like empathetic to what's going on in their life. If you also monitor how hard it is for you to hire and how, like, do you celebrate when people leave? Do people actually want to work with you again? Or are you like this toxic person in the industry, right? We're a very small community. And the fact that we don't monitor these things and make sure that we have healthy practices and processes in our environments means that we lose out on hiring really good people because they don't want to work with that company or with that team. So today I've talked about three signals. What are those three signals? Top, yes, thank you. Technology, organization, and process. If we want to build strong, resilient products, we need to build strong, resilient teams. We need to be monitoring our technology, our organizations, and our processes. So you can find out more about my thoughts, along with Catherine's thoughts, on monitoring in our book that's available right now in early release. It's also out in print in June. Effective DevOps, yes, that is a yak. And June 24th and 25th is DevOps Day Silicon Valley. I created a special discount code that gets you 26% off the registration fees just until Sunday, because this is like a special special, and there's only 10 of them, and the special discount code is SRECON 2016. So very easy to remember. Shh, I didn't publish that to the slides on the interwebs. Also, I'm gonna go look through the tags, and whoever like has tweeted the best tweet will get a free ticket to DevOps Days, so I will ping you on the internet and give you a free ticket, because I like to give away free tickets. Thank you so much. This has been a pleasure. Any questions? And any questions, you have to do it in a little sing-song voice.
Do I really have to do it in a sing-song voice?
You could be like magic.
I'm not going to do that. So I have a personal experience with one of the things you mentioned, which is the managing of the hiring and termination process. I had an experience at a company that I was at where I was not a manager, and many people on my team were very upset, and I could tell we're all looking for ways to get out. And I wonder if you have any advice for people who are not managers, who are in a toxic team, who can see that their managers and their managers' managers just don't give a damn about what's happening in their team. Do you have any uplifting advice for people in that situation for how to make their lives better other than just quitting, which is what basically all of us did?
Yes, I actually had this experience. I was the senior engineer for Sherpa, and once I realized that I needed to quit because I was the single point of failure, so I took a year to like slowly groom people. I wrote a book at Yahoo on how to manage the service. And I looked around Yahoo to see what team could I contribute to. And I joined a team that was very frustrated and felt like everything sucked. And I looked at it and I was like, wow, well, I really like the manager. I'll totally join that team. And I joined the team and they reorged and that manager's no longer my manager. So I was stuck with a manager who was less helpful, less than quality in terms of his helpfulness. And my team was like really bleh. And so what I did was I actually took a Kanban board, worked with my management, like upper management, to get people support of getting training. And then I worked with everybody to talk through their different stories, what it was that was going on with them. Over time, we built trust because everybody could see the visualization of the work that they were doing. Before we were tracking, they were saying, oh, we never get to work on our own projects. Once we actually tracked, they saw, because we called green projects like projects that we got to work on, and yellow were the projects that our customers asked us to do. It was predominantly green. So everybody got to stop telling themselves this lie that we never get to work on stuff. So it changed. Like, by the time I left that team, they were like, I had one person who had been like, I can't believe I would never work with you again. And at the end, he was like, I wish you were my manager. So it works. Talk to people. If you have a really toxic situation where you can't affect change, get out. So I think I'm out of time. Yes. So I have to hand it to the next speaker. It has been awesome. Thank you so much.